Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I want to invite you, if you will, to open in your New Testament to Mark chapter 4. We're going to spend our time tonight a little bit here at the beginning in chapter 4, but most of the time in chapter 5, but here right in the same spot. Have you ever wondered what it would have been like to be alive when Jesus lived upon the earth? And what I mean by that is to hear him teach and to see his miracles, to have those kinds of experiences with him. You know, when we study from the Gospels, I think we would do well to try to put ourselves in the place of those who did hear him and who did see him. And I think it helps us to understand the message of the writer, you know, what he's trying to get across to us in the things that they put in their accounts. But let me ask you, what are some of the words that you would use to describe the way that the people who saw Jesus, the way that people who heard Jesus, who watched his miracles, who heard his teaching, describe the way they felt about these things? We don't have to put too much imagination into that, because we have many different descriptions of just what they thought. And so we might use words like joy or devotion, maybe, or we might use a word like astonishment or confusion. Sometimes maybe even words like anger or resentment. These words are used sometimes in the Gospels to describe how people responded to what Jesus did or what Jesus said. But what I want us to see this evening is that you could add the word fear to that list. A good example of that is when Jesus and his disciples are overtaken by a storm out on the Sea of Galilee here in Mark chapter 4. And the waves are crashing over the boat. It was beginning to fill up. Jesus was sleeping, we're told. But the disciples were afraid. And so they woke up Jesus and they said to him in Mark chapter 4, verse 38, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" But I want you to notice what follows. "And he awoke," verse 39, "and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, 'Peace, be still.' And the wind ceased and there was a great calm. And he said to them, 'Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?' And they were filled with great fear, and said to one another, 'Who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him?'" How often do you think things like that happened? You know, I'm pretty sure that happened fairly frequently. And I can just go and tell you, I think I would have been among them who were afraid at times. I just go ahead and put it out there. I scare a little bit easily. And I've never understood people who, for example, like to do things like watch scary movies. You know, I don't need anywhere near that much suspense in my life. I can live without it. I watch a movie to relax. So knowing what I do about myself, I suspect that I would have experienced a great deal of fear had I been around Jesus and watched him do some of the things that he did. And I'll just tell you, that may not fit with the way many people think about Jesus. I mean, come on, this is Jesus. We know him. But I would suggest that it was the response of many people who came into contact with him and the unusual nature of many of the things that we read about in the Gospels. And I want us to read a little bit from our text this evening. I want to read some in Mark chapter 5. And I want us to do that without any preconceived ideas about Jesus and try to see this story at the beginning of Mark chapter 5 as those who would have experienced it when it took place. And so beginning in verse 1 of Mark 5, "They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes, and when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart and broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him, and night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him, and crying out with a loud voice, he said, 'What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me.' For he was saying to him, 'Come out of the man, you unclean spirit.' And Jesus asked him, 'What is your name?' And he replied, 'My name is Legion, for we are many.' He begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, 'Send us to the pigs to let us enter them.' And so he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. And the herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had had the legion, sitting there clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. And they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. And he was getting into the boat, or when he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with the demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim it in the Decapolis, how much Jesus had done for him. And everyone marveled, it says. You know, it was bad enough that the disciples were overtaken by a storm as they were crossing the Sea of Galilee. The truth is, that was only the beginning of things, wasn't it? It was likely dark by the time they got across the sea, because it took a couple of hours or so to make that trek, and it was already evening when they began. And I also wouldn't be surprised if they were blown off course by the storm when that came upon them. And of all places to land at night, they found themselves near a graveyard, or among the tombs is a more accurate way of saying that. And at this particular set of tombs was a demon-possessed man who screamed day and night. And I'll just tell you, after experiencing the storm, I know that I would have wanted to get my feet on firm ground, but the last place that I would have wanted to land was somewhere near the tombs at night with a wild maniac screaming in the distance. It doesn't sound very comforting to me to be in that situation. And I wouldn't be surprised if the disciples felt the same way. It's interesting up there in verse 2 when it talks about getting out of the boat. There's only one person that it mentions getting out of the boat. That's Jesus. When Jesus got out of the boat, that doesn't say anything about the disciples doing that. And maybe they didn't. I don't know. But when Jesus got out of the boat, he's met by this man with the unclean spirit, a man who is demon-possessed. And I somehow doubt that all of this was accidental. Seems to me that there was a purpose for Jesus and for the disciples landing where they did, when they did. And you might wonder what value there is in talking about the dealings of Jesus with a demon-possessed man. Yes, there was a purpose for all of this happening. We understand that, but what does that have to do with us? What's the practical value for people in our day reading these things? What do we get out of it? You know, there are no demon-possessed people today, so why read the stories about such things? But Mark didn't include this story because it's a story about a demon-possessed man. He wasn't trying to tell us about demons as much as he was trying to tell us something about Jesus. And one of the purposes of Mark's gospel, when you look at the whole of it, I think, is to show the power of Jesus to confront evil. That's a theme you come across frequently in the gospel of Mark. And if you read it, you'll see that power, or that pattern where evil is consistently confronted with good in the person of Jesus Christ. And he always comes out victorious in those confrontations. He never once loses a battle in all of that. And the reason Mark recorded all of this is so that those who read the gospel will understand that when they are confronted with evil, they can face it, they can defeat it through the power of Christ. He proved that he had the power to confront and to overcome evil, and he did it time and time again. And the truth is, he can help us do the same. Now, we may not have to deal with demon possession in our day, but I'll just go ahead and tell you, the influence of the devil is still very real in the world in which we live, isn't it? And what Mark revealed is that we can have victory over evil if we are willing to follow Jesus. But as we look at this passage, I want you to notice three conversations that take place in this text. And the first of those conversations I want you to notice is the one that took place between Jesus and the demons. We won't take the time to read through it again right now, but begins in verse 7 and goes down through about verse 13. And one of the interesting things about this text is that it gives us a little bit of insight into the relationship between the Lord on the one hand and the demonic world on the other. You know, there's not a whole lot said about demons in the New Testament. You know, they're typically spoken of in just kind of a matter-of-fact manner. But this passage gives us some insight into how they related to the Lord. And one thing we see in all of this is that demons acknowledged that they had absolutely no kinship whatsoever with Jesus. You know, there were times, for example, when Jesus was accused of casting out demons by the ruler of the demons, but being in league with them, so to speak. But that's not what the demons said. Look at verse 7 of our text. "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" And the implication is that there is no connection between them at all. And something else I think we find is that the demons had no idea what the Lord was, what he was going to do with them. They couldn't read his mind. They certainly were not omniscient. They were not all-knowing. And so they couldn't read the mind of Jesus to find out what he intended to do with them. They had a good idea. They had some things that they thought about that, but they didn't know for sure. And we can also see that they are absolutely powerless to resist Jesus. They were going to come out of this man that they had possessed, and that fact was certain, and they knew that it was certain that the Lord had power over them, and it was up to him where they would go. And so they entreated him not to send them into the abyss. Now, we don't read that in Mark's account, but in Luke chapter 8 and verse 31, where we have a parallel account, they mention that fact. Do not send us into the abyss. And so they had tortured this man for night and day for no telling how long, but they didn't want to be tortured themselves. The tormentors wanted to be spared from torment, but they understood that Jesus had the power to do with them as he willed. I don't know why they wanted to be sent into the pigs. It doesn't tell us that, especially considering what happened, what one person described as the silence of the hams, you know. But Jesus gave them permission one way or another. Many people have wondered why the Lord allowed such a thing, and some have concluded that it was because, you know, Jewish people didn't have any business having pigs in the first place. But I want you to keep in mind that all this takes place not in Jewish territory, but in Gentile territory. Nothing wrong with Gentiles having pigs, and so I don't know that we can say for sure why Jesus allowed this. Maybe one of the reasons was to just show the true nature of evil and of the devil and his servants. You know, they are destroyers by nature. And one thing we ought to be able to see from this story is just how malicious Satan and those who belong to him are. All he ever does is destroy life. That is the only thing he is good at. And another reason that has been suggested is that Jesus wanted to display his power over the combined forces of evil. It's one thing to say that you've cast out a demon. It's an entirely different thing to see it in a tangible sort of way take place before your very eyes. And so I don't know how many demons were in this man. I know that a Roman legion consisted of somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 to 6,000 men, generally speaking. And this group of demons identifies itself as legion. And so that may tell us something along those lines. But the passage says that all of them combined couldn't stand up to the Son of God. This is a remarkable display of his power. That is what Mark is trying to get across to us in telling us this story. But what happened on this occasion is not something that went unnoticed. As you might imagine, news spread quickly and people from around the area came to see what was going on. And so let's look at another conversation between Jesus and this occasion, the Gerasenes, or the Gadarenes, as some translations refer to them. These people were not excited. They weren't joyful about the fact that this man had just been delivered from his torment. Mark tells us in verse 15 of our text that they were afraid. Again, there's that response. And also in verse 17 that they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. We don't want you around here. And this isn't the only time in the New Testament where Jesus was asked to leave. If you remember in Luke chapter 5 and verse 8, Peter would say to Jesus there, "Depart from me." But the reason Peter would say that was because of who he was. "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man," he would say to Jesus on that occasion. It was his sinfulness and the Lord's holiness that caused him to say that. The Lord didn't leave Peter on that occasion because he could do something with a person like that. And yet when the Gerasenes ask him to leave, he does. He gets into the boat and they leave from that place. And what that says is that their motivation must have been something other than a consciousness of sin. Mark didn't really tell us what it was, but that seems clear. It's not a consciousness of their own sinfulness. It may be that they recognized that there was a powerful force at work in Jesus that they couldn't control. Most people want a religion, you know, in which they still are in control of their own lives. In fact, it makes them nervous when they can't do that, and so they'd rather not have anything to do with it. Maybe that's what's going on here. Or maybe they're just afraid that they might suffer further material loss. I mean, you know, 2,000 pigs just ran into the sea and perished, and we really can't afford for that kind of thing to take place among us. We place more value in pigs than we do in people. So Jesus, we don't want you around here doing this kind of stuff anymore. But whatever the case, Jesus did what they requested. He left them. He doesn't force himself upon anyone. But then there's a third conversation here. I want you to notice it as well. the one that took place between Jesus and the man who had been demon-possessed. It says again in verse 18 that Jesus was getting into the boat, and the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim it in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. I'm just going to tell you, what I find interesting in this, in the response of Jesus on this occasion, is that it's a little bit different from what we see on other occasions when a similar request was being made. If you read through the Gospels, you find a number of examples of the Lord asking people to follow him. And here was a man who comes to Jesus and he says, "I want to follow you." And Jesus says, "No, that's not how this is going to be." And so in this story, he grants the request of the demons to go into the pigs. He grants the request of the Gerasenes when they ask him to leave. But he denies the request of this man who just wants to be with him. He wants to follow him. Isn't that interesting? I think another interesting difference is that when Jesus healed someone, he typically told that person not to say anything to anyone about it. And he tells this man, "I want you to go and tell people what the Lord has done for you." And so rather than charging him with silence, he commissions him to speak. And have you ever wondered why Jesus changes his approach here? What was so different about this situation that he treated it in a manner different from the way he treated other people at other times that he dealt with? And one reason may have been that Jesus was in Gentile territory here, and there's no need to worry about all of the popular and yet erroneous ideas about the Messiah being circulated, where when a miracle was done, they might want to take him by force and make him king, as we read about on other occasions. And to say something about what the Lord had done for him in the region of the Gerasenes wouldn't have stirred up that kind of thing among the Gentiles like it would among the Jews. But maybe the more important reason is that while Jesus didn't really need a Gentile following him around Galilee and Judea, that wasn't going to help anything, he did want to plant the first seeds of what would later become a magnificent harvest among the Gentile nations. And really not too far in the future from this point. He wanted them to be exposed, even though briefly at this point, to the concept of a Savior. And so that's what this man did. He went and told people about the one who had saved him from his terrible plight. But with the remainder of our time this morning, I want to point out three implications of this text quickly. Three points that I think we can conclude from this passage that'll, I think, give us something practical to take away. And the first is this. To meet Jesus means that deliverance becomes available. Isn't that what we find here? We may not like to think about it, but the demon-possessed man in our text is really kind of a perfect picture of any person without Christ. He is out of his mind, he is in bondage, and he is tormented. That's a pretty good picture of the person outside of Christ. And I think that's kind of how it's meant to be portrayed here. You know, the message of Mark is that we can be delivered from the forces of evil in Christ, that's where that's found. The Apostle John would say in 1 John 3 and verse 8 that whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil. They belong to him, in other words. And the good news is that Jesus has just as much power to take away our sins as he did to free this demon-possessed man from what was tormenting him. And I think that's what John went on to say in that same passage, 1 John 3 and verse 8, that the reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. He has proven time and time again his ability to do that. And that's the takeaway here. Jesus can deliver us. And so our passage this evening is just one of many proofs of the fact that Jesus had the power to do that. Second, to meet Jesus means that allegiance becomes discernible. You see, there's no middle ground with the Lord. When you meet Jesus, when you truly come face to face with him, you either want to leave with him or you want him to leave you. That's how that works. That's the kind of effect he has on people who truly come face to face with him. And what that tells us is that Jesus never intended for anyone to take a neutral position with regard to allegiance to him. He wants really all or nothing. And that makes me wonder how many people in our society have really met the Lord, how many truly know him, how many people have truly become acquainted with Jesus, because far too often in our society, what we find is people who are content with some kind of middle ground. They're not too interested in following Jesus wherever he may lead, but they don't want him to leave altogether either. They kind of want to maintain that contact with him. It's just going to be at arm's length. Maybe what that tells us is that that we haven't really come to understand him, if that's how we are. Because those who have truly met Jesus either want to completely dedicate their lives to him, or they want to get as far away from him as they can. When people meet Jesus, their allegiance becomes clear. And then finally this evening, to meet Jesus means that silence becomes impossible. You see, people who met the Lord couldn't keep quiet about him. And that was one way or the other. They either slandered his name or they held it up as the hope of the world. But they couldn't keep silent about him. And that begs the question from us, I think. What do we have to say about Jesus? Are we willing to speak up? We know who he is. And sometimes we're content to just sit back and to be quiet, to let the voices of unbelief be the ones that are heard. The truth is, if we know him, we can't do that, can we? I hope that our study this evening has maybe caused you to think some about Jesus in a renewed sort of way. You know, people in the first century, the people he dealt with, they couldn't ignore him. They couldn't follow him at a distance, generally speaking. They either hated him or they wanted to devote their lives to him. They either wanted him hung upon a cross or they wanted to follow him wherever he went. So that's the question for us. Do we need to meet Jesus again? Do we truly recognize who he is? Do we have the courage of our convictions? Do we really want to do the things that we claim that we want to do as disciples of Jesus Christ? Do we really want to follow the Lord? We can help you in some way this evening in your relationship with him, whatever that need might be. We hope you'll allow us to do that. That's why we come together, or one of the reasons we come together. So if you recognize this evening your need to respond to the Lord's invitation, maybe you've never obeyed the gospel of Christ, why not do that tonight? Why not become his? Let him deliver you from evil. Or if it's in some other sense that you need to be delivered, come to the Lord. Let him help you. He has the power. He's proven it again and again. If we can help you to do that, we ask you to come as we stand and as we sing.
Why keep Jesus?